from spooky legends past, down through generations, to haunted locations that hold a ghostly past. Come one, come all, come finders and seekers, hear the creepy side of Aoife.
Welcome to The Creepy Side of Aoife. I am Dan Kozlowski.
And I'm Nora Herchick.
On tonight's episode, we have Bill and Tanya, founders of Empty Casket Paranormal. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Please try to share, how did you guys get interested in the paranormal? What sparked your interest in the beginning?
Well, I grew up in a house that was haunted. It mainly affected my brother and sister, but I did see an apparition once when I was younger. But when I was in college, that was about the time that the Ghost Hunter show came out, and so we decided for fun to start our own little ghost hunting group and went around to Westmount Sanatorium and Centralia and Gettysburg. And well, most of the guys in the club, after doing that stuff, their curiosity was sated, but I got bit by the bug and I've been interested in ever since. And I would go out whenever I could, you know, usually about once or twice a year I'd get out, you know, usually down to Gettysburg, me and my brother would go and we'd do some ghost hunting. But after Tom and I got together, we went down to Gettysburg and decided at that point that we needed to make this a much more common occurrence, and we created Empty Casket.
And as for me, like Bill, I grew up in a haunted house. I still live there to this day. I've been part of the paranormal since I was in diapers. It's always been part of my life. I grew up with it. I was always educated in it. And, you know, as the years went by, my children have seen apparitions. There's a famous one that we call Timmy. That's a big thing in our house. Kids claim they saw a little boy sitting on the table, and it was years apart from each one. Going forward, you know, when I met Bill, I was really wanting to just get my feet wet and really start investigating. There's so many amazing stories and folklore and legends, and I just wanted to be a part of it. And I guess we both have that scientific mindset and that, you know, curious mindset that we really just grouped together and formed Empty Casket.
I think that's really interesting the way that you said, you know, you guys have a very scientific approach to it, because on your website, you specifically say our approach is to utilize the scientific method and scientific techniques to document as thoroughly as possible when performing investigations. Why did you guys decide to go about it in that respect as opposed to, I guess, more of like a casual, you know, just kind of investigating that way?
Well, I have a degree in electrical engineering from the University of Scranton. I minored in math and physics. So the scientific method has been greatly instilled in me, both in my education and my career. So doing anything other than taking it in a very scientific way just really wasn't an option for me. You know, we want to be taken seriously by the scientific community. And the only way to do that is play by their rules.
And to add on to his, I'm not a scientist, but I have that same logical mindset. We're both, I guess we can say that we both fall in that middle ground of not being fully a believer and not being fully skeptical. We believe that if you come at it right in the middle, you can get better results and look at it differently than as being like everything's 100% ghost or 100% nothing. So we try to, you know, utilize the scientific method. Plus it answers more questions for us, I think.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if you just approach it with an open mind, that seems to help out a lot. Because like you said, you're not on the pro and you're not on the con side of it. You're probably just going into it to see what you find, to see if you find any evidence, as opposed to saying, walking in and saying, I'm not going to find anything here.
Exactly. And when we do capture evidence, you know, the very first thing we do is try to figure out mundane explanations for it. Try to, you know, was there somebody there? Was it something creaking? Could this be something non-paranormal? We try to eliminate all of those possibilities before we say, yeah, what we captured was something paranormal.
Mm-hmm. Now, majority of the cases you go out on, are you able to explain it?
About 50-50, I would say. Maybe 60-40. A lot of things we can come up with explanations. And just because we come up with an explanation does not mean it's not paranormal. It just means it wasn't good enough evidence for us to say this is paranormal, so we're not going to present it that way.
Yeah, usually after an investigation, I think I'd be the first thing to say, okay, what could it have also been? Let's debunk this. I get so excited in the moment, and then the day after, I'm like going through everything. I'm like, could have been this, could have been that.
Especially when you have a little time to think about it.
Right. Yeah.
And for that reason, we make sure we have recorders going 100% of the time during investigation. We have cameras going whenever possible. Some of the places we've been to, they asked us not to have cameras, but we try to record them.
I'm looking at your website right now. You guys have a lot of equipment that you bring with you. Obviously, the full spectrum cameras and the voice recorders you have listed here, spirit boxes, EMF meters, and coffin pods. You guys want to talk about that a little bit?
So, as I said, I'm an electrical engineer, and when we saw some of the prices for some of the equipment, it was just way too high. So I thought, I'll just make my own. And so the very first thing I made was the coffin pod, which is it's basically a REM pod. It's almost exactly the same circuitry in it, but I was able to make it a lot cheaper. And we actually just recently started making them to sell them. We have our coffin pods that we sell. We have a smaller pocket-sized version that we call the RIP pod. It's a little tombstone. And then we have the K2 meters, which is the kind of the bread and butter ghost hunting tool that I've upgraded to include temperature sensors and sound.
Now, for the listeners, what exactly does the REM pod do?
So what the REM pod does is it generates a electromagnetic field around the antenna. And when something interferes with that field, it registers in the circuitry and it produces a sound and a light. And the sound and light varies depending on the strength of the disturbance in the electromagnetic field around it. It's very similar to the pitch half of the musical instrument, a theremin.
And I like to add that, it's not 100% science. There's no guarantee, what we're using always works or always will give us results. That's why we use different techniques and different approaches for everything. Even now, we come up with ideas and experiments to try, just because, like I said, there's no solid science to it. It's basically being creative and thinking out of the box.
Yeah, I have a few different experiments that I'm currently putting together that we're going to try at our next investigation.
Mm-hmm. What are those experiments? What would you try at a different investigation?
So one of the things that I just finished up that we're going to try at our next investigation is what we've come to call the spiritual water wheel. So there's a theory within the paranormal that when you're around moving water, whether it be a creek or a river or something like that, that there's a influx of more spiritual activity, because that moving water provides a source of energy for them to manifest. So Tanya comes to me one day and suggests, well, what if we brought our own moving water to an investigation? So I set up a pump with a circular tube on it that just pumps the water in a circle. And there's a little platform in the middle that we can put our equipment and kind of see if that might bring a little uptick in spiritual activity.
It sounds very interesting. That's the first time I ever heard of an investigator doing something like that. And I did hear in the past that spirits and paranormal do like running water. I did hear that a few times.
And like I said, we use everything from cat toys. Another thing that I came up with, I'm like, how about we just use a rope and just put it on one end of a doorway or, into another room and try to play tug of war, try to get something to pull it or anything like that. Simple things like that.
There's definitely like a spectrum sort of, ways that you can do paranormal investigations. It seems like you can have all this crazy gear and, all the fancy, super expensive things, but there are definitely cheaper options as well. And even on your page, again, it says, that you guys look into carbon monoxide levels and humidity and the barometric pressure. And those are things that I guess the average person might not necessarily think about, that a spirit or whatever it may be could be impacting in the environment around them as well.
Well, not only that, but some of those things like carbon monoxide levels and natural gas and propane and things like that, it can actually cause hallucinations, and you know, we want to measure that to see if what people are experiencing are legitimate paranormal experiences or something that's just being created within their head.
Something that we do before every investigation, we actually have a protocol, basically like a checklist. For Bill and I, we literally go down the list. We go from everywhere to how we're feeling that day. What's our temperature? Do we have any illnesses? Are we on any medication? How was our general day affected before walking into an investigation? Do we live near certain things like water or electrical wiring? And also, where are the locations at? What is it surrounded by? We try to take every aspect into consideration.
Yeah, because you don't want anything giving you like a pretense of what you know be the outcome. You don't want something to fog up your investigation itself.
Well, there's that aspect of it, but also we're hoping that as we collect more evidence and do more investigations, that maybe we can find a correlation between how people are feeling and what kind of experiences they end up during an investigation, or the factors around a location. You know, how does that affect the spiritual activity there? We even track the moon phases, solar winds, solar flares, things like that, just to see if maybe there's a correlation there.
Have you seen any correlation so far, or is this something you just started?
We've been doing it this way for, I don't know, maybe about 6-7 months now. So I don't think we have enough data yet to say that we have anything just yet.
Definitely an interesting approach, though.
Like I said, that's kind of how we want to go about it, with more of a scientific mindset and to view it like that, because we don't know what could be affecting an area or a person. And it could be anything logically, like, you know, their mental mindset or the environment, their external environment. It could be any of those things.
So far with your investigations, have you have any that really stuck in your mind, any of your favorite ones?
I think one of the biggest ones we did, or at least one of the most impactful ones we've done, was the theater at North, the old North Scranton Junior High School in Scranton. That we did that with Wyoming Valley Ghost Tours. They're a local company that opens up a lot of these locations to you know, you pay your fee and they bring you in and supply you with some equipment and give you an opportunity to investigate the place. And this was the first time we went with them. And while the location itself didn't necessarily give us a ton of evidence, there are some like little side things that happened that were really impactful and kind of changed our approach to the paranormal. Prior to the investigation, we met one of the tenants and just completely randomly just happened to be in the right place to run into her. And we told her why we were there, and she mentioned that she had been seeing a shadow figure in her apartment and asked us to come up and take a look after our investigation. So, yeah, sure, no problem. So we go through our investigation and we find out that a lot of people there have been saying that they've been seeing shadow figures. And then two of the other groups, I believe, they had gotten a man's name come through and who said that he had recently died within the last week, and that his daughter was there, and the daughter's name and the man's name came through, and it was the name of the woman we had met. So after the investigation, we went up to her room, and we were talking to her, and she apologized for being a little out of sorts because her father had died a week earlier. And we just kind of looked at her and asked her what her father's name was, and it corresponded with the name of the man that this other group had gotten. And it kind of hit us hard that this is very real for people. And so we told her what happened and what the other group had found. And she broke down a little bit and you know, rightfully so. But I think knowing that her father was still around her and you know, and enjoying the place, because he loved that place. So it kind of brought a little bit of peace to her.
Closure.
Yeah.
And that was like something amazing, because we got to deliver a piece of closure to someone who was in mourning. And hopefully that has helped her to move on, you know, going forward.
Right. Prior to that, we were going into this purely as collecting evidence. And after that experience, you know, while we still want to collect evidence and follow the scientific method and all that, you know, we kind of remember that there's a human element to this, and we want to be able to help people, you know, whether it be helping the spirits pass on, helping the people find closure.
Or just finding an explanation why it's going on. Sometimes, you know, people are so distraught because they don't know what's going on. They're afraid, and rightfully so, you know, unworldly. So they're not sure how to approach it. If we can come in and try to give them an explanation, or at least feel that they're on the right path to fixing it, then that means something to us.
Did this woman's father have another connection to the theater or to the, because it was a junior high school, correct?
It was a junior high school, yes.
So did he have a connection there other than her currently living there? Like, did he go there or something?
No, he was attending there as well. That was the only connection he had. But some of the things that the other group had said was that what came true was, you know, he would like to sneak onto the balcony and watch some of the plays. He liked going down to the activities room when they had different activities going on. And he just really enjoyed his time there. And when we were talking to her, but before we even mentioned what was said, she said that her father used to like to go and sneak into the balcony and watch the plays, and he loved the activities that they had there. And it really kind of added a lot of validation that what we had heard from this other group kind of matched up exactly with what happened to her. And so we were very confident that it was the same person.
So it might have just been a case of him really liking that property, that building, and just not wanting to leave.
Yeah, that could be. And with him having, you know, recently passed, his energy could still be there.
Now, I have been in talking with John and Carrie Andy, the owners of Wyand Valley Ghost Tours, and they said since that night, they really haven't gotten much of his name come through. But we found out that the woman had left the apartments, and so we're thinking maybe he went with her, and that he wasn't necessarily staying there for the place, he was staying there for her.
That would definitely make a little bit more sense, especially if they've done investigations there since then and haven't had any interactions with his spirit anymore.
Yeah.
And something that we are looking forward now, and something that we're in discussion about, this area, northeastern Pennsylvania, especially this area, has a lot to it. And we're interested to see, you know, what we can start gathering in terms of the spiritual activity that revolves around the area.
We've heard on several different podcasts that were not related to this area, just mentioned that northeastern Pennsylvania was kind of a weird place. And, you know, we've certainly heard a lot of stories, you know, cryptid sightings and UFOs and then all the hauntings. And so we decided to, since we can't find any consolidated source of all the weirdness in the area, that we were going to start collecting these stories and over the years kind of put them together and try to consolidate them. And the funny thing is, we decided to do this past Friday morning. And that night we did a investigation at the Albright Library. And during the tour of the place, they let us into one of the back rooms that they don't normally allow the public. And it's got some of the more research material that you can still go and check out, but you just can't go get it yourself. Well, they let us in the room, and very first thing you see when you walk into this room is a filing cabinet that says UFOs. So we will be going back there to read those files.
Oh, interesting. They have a whole cabinet full of UFO files?
Yeah. Who would have known that would be just, you know, in a file cabinet in the library?
Yeah, we were shocked by it. We can't wait to get a chance to go back there and read them for ourselves.
We definitely have learned since developing Empty Casket, there's a lot of synchronicities that have come along that kind of just guide us down the path. Like things, we're meeting people and going to places and experiencing things that kind of all just kind of fit together. It's like a puzzle. And it's so amazing to, you know, find that next piece.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we're being guided down a path to some answer. We don't know what it is yet, but we're enjoying the ride.
I wonder if there's any sort of correlation upon like the locations that any of these, you know, kind of hot spots in our area are, if there was like, you know, there had been some sort of building that was in that one place. I mean, so often there's old buildings that get torn down or whatever, but I wonder if there's any correlation if you mark things on a map as to, you know, where there's more or less activity, no matter what kind.
That's something we're going to be doing, and something I think we've already found out is
a lot of them are connected to the mines.
A lot of them are connected to the mines.
There is mines underneath the theater at North. There are mines underneath the Albright Library. We investigated Tanya's house a few times, and
I'm right up from the mines.
Yeah,
like there is a lot of connection with the mines, and just talking to the old timers, just in general, like nothing ghostly related. My grandfather used to always talk about the weird things that happened with the mines, and other people have spoken, like, you know, watch out for the woods. There's stuff in the woods, and there's stuff near the old mine shafts. And we hear a lot of things in connection with mines.
It kind of makes sense, too, because obviously mining was so big here in this area in particular. But also, I mean, they're digging into the earth very deep and, I guess, kind of disturbing things. And obviously accidents and everything that happened in the mines. And it was such a big part of some people's lives as well.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I mean, even aside from paranormal, there's also like residual effects from mining that can still affect us to this day, from them just mining and opening pockets of gas and all that environmental issues too.
And the mine also, I think it kind of creates a conduit that spirits can move from one place to another. We've encountered in a couple different locations that were over mines where, you know, the spirit that came through said very clearly that they're a traveler, that they're just passing through, and that they came through the mines.
That's so weird that you just said that, because I was actually just thinking about that, because obviously the mines do go all over the place under here, and it could almost act as sort of a highway or, you know, roadways for whatever it may be to sort of travel around in the area.
Like a spiritual superhighway.
Yeah.
It is very interesting because we have a lot of mines in this area as opposed to places across the country where this didn't happen at the time. There was no mine. So that might be a good connection there you guys have.
One thing we've noticed is that different places around the country, the areas that have the biggest spike in UFO activity and paranormal activity and cryptids all tend to be around very large cave systems. And we don't have large cave systems around here, but we have the mines.
Right.
West Virginia, for example,
Kentucky,
they have big paranormal things that happen, and they're all mining states.
Yeah, the mines are almost man-made cave systems in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that we found really interesting with this area, and something we definitely want to research more is what the mines have. Like, for example, when my kids were younger, they saw a little boy, and they described him. Now, mind you, when my son saw him, he was 3. When my daughter saw him years later, she was around 3, 4. And they described him as being like a railroad, like a conductor. He had a hat with a light on it. He was dirty. He had overalls. That, you know, that reminds me of a coal boy. And that's
definitely consistent with that description of, you know, or pictures that you've seen of young boys that used to work in the coal mines as well as the men.
Yeah, and even up from me, I live on the base of the mountain. I live on a hill, and the street up from me is flat, and it was mined in. But old neighbors of ours used to say they would see the miners come down from the mountain in the wee early morning hours. They see the lanterns of their lights coming down the mountain. I've never seen it myself, but.
Now, when you were talking about the little boy your kids seen, is that something they seen inside your house?
Yeah, my son saw him. It was around Christmas time. I was cleaning upstairs, and my son comes up, knocks on the door. He says, "Mom, there's a little boy sitting on the table." And he was, you know, I assumed he was making up imaginary friend. And we went down. He talked. I said, "Can you describe him for me?" And he said, "Yeah, he looks like a conductor. He has, you know, overalls, and he's a little dirty, and he has a hat with a light on it, and he says his name is Timmy." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And for a while, that was, you know, we thought he was his imaginary friend until weird stuff started happening, and my son started saying, you know, Timmy wants him to do bad things because he likes to see, you know, me and his father fight, and, you know, just strange things began to happen. And we told him, you know, Timmy has to go, and you have the power to tell him to go. And after that was all said and done, years later, after I had my daughter and she was that age, she comes barreling in the room saying there's a little boy sitting on the table, described him exactly as my son did, said his name. And, you know, we verified it with my son, who was older then. Did you say something to your sister? He's like, I didn't even think about Timmy. I haven't thought about him in years.
Have you guys had any experiences with him since your kids have grown up a little bit more? Do you think he's still around the house?
I don't know what's in my house. I've lived there since the day I was born. I would have been born in that house. That was my mother's plan. I've never seen him. My brother's never seen him. But we've encountered strange things in my house. And Bill can testify to that. We've investigated my house a lot. And there's weird things. Now our biggest one is we call her other mother. The kids hear me calling for them every day. My son will come out of his room once or twice a day, like, what'd you want, Mom? I'm like, I didn't say anything. Or they have seen me walk around the house and I'm not there. That's happened a lot too.
Has this ever scared your kids, or do they kind of, you know, go about it as, okay, like it's a thing that's happening?
I think there were upticks where it scared them. I've definitely been scared in that house a few times. I think right now they're just so used to it. We are all just so used to it. That doesn't even faze us. I mean, unless something huge happens, we just kind of, you know, we laugh, or we just be like, all right, yeah, I guess other mother wanted you, not me. That's basically how we go about it now. But Bill was doing some construction in the house recently for my kids, doing their rooms. And there was definitely a presence there that was trying to stop him from continuing.
Oh, yeah. Everything that could possibly have gone wrong went wrong. And it culminated, and I was putting in the floor, and they were just pieces of flooring that would lock together. And two pieces, no matter what I did, would not lock together. And I just had enough of it. So I staged the room. And as soon as I did, the floorboards popped right together. The same two boards that wouldn't connect earlier popped right together, and I had no more issues the rest of the construction. And when I was all done, I went and I staged through the whole house just to make sure it was cleaned out.
Wow, that's very interesting. So as soon as you staged that area, everything just sort of worked it out for you, right?
Yeah. Since then, we've done some investigations at her house. And I think doing that, it doesn't really like me too much. It's threatened me a couple times.
When you say threaten you, what do you mean by that?
So we were doing a thing called the Estes method, in which you listen to the spirit box through headphones with blindfolds on, and you just say anything that you hear. And this way you don't hear any of the questions being asked. And so it takes away the whole aspect of it that you might be listening for something pertinent to the question. Mm-hmm. Now you just listen to anything for anything. So it was actually Tanya's ex-husband who was in visiting, and he wanted to try doing that method. So we were doing that, and, you know, we had different things come through, some things that we think may have been family members. And then his whole voice and demeanor changed and said, I'm here now. And then there's this really creepy laugh. And after a few more things came out, he said, hey, Bill, watch your neck. And that's when her ex-husband threw the headphones off, said, I can't do this anymore. That scared the hell out of him. And he ran out of the room.
You mentioned staging, obviously, before, but is there any other sort of precautions that you guys take if you start to feel that there is a negative presence around you to sort of make sure that doesn't connect with you or stay there or anything like that?
Well, for the most part, just when we leave an investigation, just saying, you know, thanking the spirits for interacting with us, but telling them very firmly that they need to stay there, they can't come with us. For the most part, that's all you really need to do. However, along with our ghost hunting stuff, we keep sage and black salt and rosaries and Palo Santo and different things that we have just in case we end up needing them.
And we encourage other people that are into that, you know, to always, you know, basically close out an investigation. You're opening up doorways, and you don't want nothing attaching to you. You don't want any negativity. Even if it's, you know, energy, the negative energy, you don't want to be taking that home with you. So we always encourage everyone to kind of say, you know, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to, you know, try to make contact. But, you know, you must stay here and we're going home.
Yeah, it's funny. Just last week, somebody asked me what I would do if a ghost or spirit attached itself to me and came home with me. And I said, well, if it was a negative energy entity, I'd try to get rid of it. But if it wasn't, I make ghost hunting equipment, so I'm going to put them to work testing it out.
It's definitely always better to be safe than sorry in situations like that. Just absolutely. Close it out if you possibly can.
Yes, definitely.
Well, you definitely had some interesting stories for us tonight. I'd like to thank you for coming on. But if anyone wants any more information about your group, where would they find some information about you? Do you have a website, Facebook page?
So we have a Facebook page, Empty Casket Paranormal. You can find us on Instagram at Empty Casket Paranormal. And our website is EmptyCasketParanormal.com. We do a podcast where we go into detail about all of our investigations and what happened and discuss them. That could be found on any of the major podcast sources such as Apple and Spotify. And it's called the Empty Casket Podcast. You could also find it on our YouTube page, which is Empty Casket Paranormal. All the evidence that we collect, we put up there for anyone to kind of look at and give their opinions on, as well as our podcast we put there. And if anyone's interested in looking at any of the equipment that we build, we have a Etsy page, Empty Casket Equipment, that we have our equipment up for sale at.
That is pretty interesting because you are the only group that we talked to so far that's actually selling ghost investigating equipment.
It wasn't our intentions at first, but he does really good work.
I was just going to make it for ourselves at first, but people have loved it and asking for it. And I guess we, it hurts to make a little money.
And it helps fund our investigations because we do a lot of them that, you know, you have to kind of pay to go do. Which is fine. It goes towards a good cause.
I'd like to thank you again for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to The Creepy Side of NEPA.
Don't forget to like our Facebook page, WNEP's Creepy Side of NEPA, and subscribe or follow us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us.
Until next time, enjoy The Creepy Side of NEPA.
This has been The Creepy Side of NEPA. If you have a spooky story that took place in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, send it to ghost@WNEP.com for your chance to share it on an upcoming episode. We're dying to hear from you.